I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Your podcasts.
Somebody call for a cleaner. Kauffman Stadium got swept today. Royals are rolling, ladies and gentlemen. After hours here on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber here with you. Jacob Mustard alongside producing tonight's program. We're with you till 9 o'clock tonight. Our number, 816. Wow. Just busted out the KC Mo area code there. That's crazy. 913-586-7965. A 10-0 drubbing for the boys in blue today, who have now won 15 of their last 17 games. And this one came from all sides, everywhere you could imagine today. A 10-0 beating, two hits for Jonathan India. How about a four-hit day for Bobby Baseball? 4-for-5 at the dish, two RBIs in the game. Royals scored 10 runs, didn't hit a single home run because they had 17 hits as a team. Vinny Pasquantino with a multi-hit game. Salvi with a multi-hit game. Mikel Garcia with two more knocks. He's now hitting .326 this year. Michael Massey with a two-hit game today. Drew Waters had two hits. Freddie Fermin had a hit. Eight of the nine Royals starters in the order today had a hit. Jacob, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to ask our listeners, can you take a wild guess as to the one guy in the Royals starting lineup today who did not register a hit in his four at-bats?
Don't tell me it was Salvi.
It was not. Salvi had two hits today. It was, wait for it, Hunter Renfroe. Color everybody in the Metro shocked to hear that statement. Yeah, Hunter Renfroe, 0-for-4 at the dish. He struck out once. The Royals only struck out four times as a team, one of them from Fermin and two from Salvador Perez. He's now hitting a lowly, measly 152 at the plate. What a day for the Kansas City Royals. Let me talk about Vinny Pasquantino for a minute. Because if you haven't been listening in the midday shows, many of you guys are at work, very busy individuals. I get it. Myself and Jay Binkley have been filling in for Alex and Cody this week because they're off in California. Their old producer's getting married out there, so they've been enjoying the West Coast and getting set for the wedding. So Bink and I have been in this week hosting the midday show. And man, I have heard a lot this week on the show and in previous weeks, I've heard a lot of complaints about Vinny Pasquantino to start this year. I heard from people this week, I'm not making it up, that the Royals should consider calling up Jack Caglione and benching Vinny and putting Cags at first base. And I'm like, really? Are we on? That's an honest-to-God conversation that we're having. I know Vinny got off to a slow start. In fact, as late as April 29th against the Tampa Bay Rays, he was hitting .174 after going 0-for-4 in that game. But he's now hitting .210 after today's game. His batting average has leapt 36 points in just over a week. He's hitting .333 now through the first 8 days plus of the month of May now. He's been outstanding to begin this month, and he still currently leads the team in both home runs and RBIs. You just had to give Vinny a minute to get it figured out. Bobby Witt Jr. is going to be in the MVP race again this year, unless Aaron Judge continues to hit .400 all year long, and then nobody else stands a chance in hell. But Bobby's going to be in that top three conversation, as he will be for the foreseeable future. So good. Here's the thing that I don't think I expected at all, and that's that Mikel Garcia, is it sustainable? I don't know. Will he continue to do this in July when we get there? I don't know. If you were to hit the All-Star break right now, if the All-Star game was today, Mikel Garcia might be a starter in the All-Star game. He's been that good, hitting .326, which is the best on the team, outpacing Bobby Witt Jr. by literally a 1,000th of a point. and they have the same on-base percentage. Both of them lead the team hitting .392 on the year. The guy's slugging is at a .508, and that's something that with his changed approach at the plate, I kind of expected his power numbers to dip a little bit because his approach is much different. He's quickened up his swing. He's seeing pitching so much better than he was, and he's hit 4 long balls to begin the year. He's top 10 in Major League Baseball in batting average so far this year is Mikel Garcia. Drew Waters, now in limited AB since getting called up in that move, sending MJ Melendez down to AAA, he's hitting .286. Michael Massey is now back up over the Mendoza line. He's hitting .206 after today's performance. Salvi's back up over .240. Jonathan India is creeping up towards a .240 batting average with an OBP at .340. And man, that's maybe not even the best part. The best part is, fresh off of Tommy John surgery, Chris Bubich is one of the best pitchers in the American League. The guy in now 8 starts this year has got a 1.69 ERA, which is the 7th best in Major League Baseball. Through the first 6 weeks of the season, Chris Bubich, your number 5 starter, has been your best starting pitcher. Better than Cole Reagans, better than Seth Lugo, and better than Michael Wacha. And those three guys aren't pitching poorly. That's the most insane part of the whole scenario, is that those three guys are still pitching really well. Cole Reagans has four games this year with double-digit strikeouts. There's not another pitcher in baseball with more than 2. Seth Lugo just had a great pitching performance the other night. Went 6 2/3, scoreless. Michael Wacha, fresh off of a great pitching performance for him yesterday. Chris Bubich today goes 7 scoreless, strikes out 7, walks 1, gave up 6 hits, but he worked himself out of every jam he found himself in throughout this game. Steven Cruz, one of the more unsung heroes of this Royals team to begin the year, still has yet to give up an earned run in 10 innings pitched this year. He's thrown in 11 games, struck out 7 to 7 combined hits and walks. That's pretty damn good. Yes, and I know what everybody's going to say. It was the White Sox. It was a 4-game sweep of a Major League Baseball team. You know how hard it is to sweep a team in 3 games, let alone 4? Let alone an interleague rival, interdivision rival. I know the White Sox are bad. We all know that. That's well documented. But to beat a team 4 times in 4 days and to now have won 15 of your last 17 is unbelievable. 3 of the top 5 teams in the American League right now reside in the American League Central, which is, again, very similar to the situation we caught ourselves in last year. The Detroit Tigers currently have the best record in the American League at 24-13. The Royals are sitting at 23-16. The Guardians at 22-15. And then you've got the Seattle Mariners at 22-14. The Yankees are 21-16 at the moment. 15 of 17 games. Royals are 15-5 at Kauffman this year. 15-5, which is the best home record in the American League, and one of the 4 best home records in Major League Baseball. The Mets are 13-3 at City. You've got the Dodgers, who are 15-3, and the Padres at Petco are 14-4. Pretty good company to be in when you're in the same category as the Dodgers, Padres, and Mets, who right now also have those are the 3 best teams in the National League as of this moment. 913-586-7965 is our number. Somebody said I would have gotten a hit out there today. Maybe. I give it a shot. I'm not sure I could see 90. Folks, I got cut from my high school baseball team as a freshman. It's a true story. I was a left-handed second baseman, if you can believe it. And my coaches tried to put me in the outfield, a position in which I'd never played in my life. Could not judge a fly ball to save my life. Couldn't do it. In fact, when they brought me in for my meeting, Jacob, when they cut me, they recommended I go out for track because they were impressed with my speed and endurance.
At least they recommended you something.
It's a heartbreaker, dude. guy who grew up playing baseball, loved it. But again, I'm not joking. I played second base my entire life. I am left-handed. I am the most left-handed person you've ever met. I almost failed my keyboarding class in junior high because I kept moving the mouse to the left side of the keyboard. I refused to use the mouse with my right hand. I have since learned how to do that. But yeah, I think you might have more confidence in my hitting ability than I do. Taking a look here, Garcia is an all-star. Right now, yeah, it's hard to disagree with the way he's played this year. Somebody else said this team can win the pennant. Maybe. Yankees are banged up. No Gerrit Cole, right? Their AL Rookie of the Year from last year is dealing with some injury issues. They just put Giancarlo Stanton on the 60-day. Aaron Judge can only carry them for so long, I guess. The guy can't hit 400 forever. Maybe he can. I don't know. Nobody's done it since Ted Williams, so I think that somebody's got to prove to me they can do it. Somebody was talking about the complaints with this Royals team with Vinny. The complaints were warranted, honestly warranted, according to this person. Not the benching part, but he's been rocky. Fair. Fair point. He has been rocky. But again, guy's hitting up over 330 in May so far this year. Got off to a slow start. But I think that, you know, if you follow baseball, you follow this team, you had to have had this thought, and even in the back of your mind, whether it was or the front, either one, that you had a feeling Vinny was going to figure it out. You don't just go from a guy that was pacing for 110 RBIs last year before the injury to a guy who hits below the Mendoza line. I don't know. I don't buy that one entirely. Somebody said that's sad for loss in baseball. In fairness, it wasn't organized like school baseball. It was just growing up in a small town playing, you know, in the Tri-County Baseball League or whatever it was growing up. I played second base. I don't know. It's just the way things went. 734 in the text line said they played a team that's won 8 games this year. Calm down. Firstly, the White Sox have won 10 games. Okay. They've won 10 games, so it's a little bit better. It's not a lot better, but it's a little bit better. I get it. They played a bad baseball team, but you're supposed to beat bad baseball teams. I don't see what the complaint is. You're supposed to beat a bad baseball team. I can't stand it when people say that, oh, well, you beat so-and-so. Yep, W's a W, ain't it? These are professional baseball players, aren't they? What's better? Should they have lost to them? Your argument collapses on itself in that way.
Well, and it's not like they skated by them either. It was a dominant performance.
Today was. Yeah, the other three games, they kind of bumped right. I mean, to win the second game of the series, a guy had to literally take one off the dome in order for you to win that game, right? And the worst part was is that Michael A. Taylor, former Kansas City Royal, I might add, had a play in right field to get it to the second baseman, and he airmailed it. And so, yeah, there were some Abbott and Costello-like things that happened along the way that helped them win some of these ball games. I don't argue that. They almost gave it away yesterday. You know, Carlos Estevez really struggled in the ninth, but he was able to bow up and get the Royals the W. I understand, yeah, they won 4 games against the White Sox. You got to win the games that are in front of you. And if you can do it and other teams can't, that's how you make the playoffs. Boo-hoo, they beat a team 4 times in 4 days. That's really hard to do. I don't care if the White Sox haven't won a game this year. Somebody said it's how we're winning, too. Yeah, I mean, they're winning by gritting through their teeth. They're leaning on their pitching a lot, which is a little bit concerning, I have to say, right? But a win like this one today, 10-0, the bats are playing, you know, the bats are doing their job at a much higher clip than they were in April. I mean, you look at the splits. In the month of April, the Royals hit .225 as a team. So far in May, they've hit .285. Massive 60-point jump from one to the next. Huge for this team moving forward. I think we all need to, you know, this team isn't all of a sudden going to win the World Series, right? Let's find the fine line here, right? The Royals struggled the first 3 weeks of the season. The last 3 weeks of the season, they've been dominant. After going 8-14 in the first 22 games, you've won 15 of your last 17. Beautiful. It's a course correction. We're right back in the thick of it. This Royals team is right back in that conversation for 86 to 90 wins. Back in the playoff hunt, back competing for an AL Central Division title, back in a wild card spot, trying to get back to the postseason once again. That's where this is. I'm not going to expect this to continue. It's not, you know, they're not going to all of a sudden win 28 of their next 30. Just win the ball games that are in front of you. I don't care who it's against. I'd have been as excited if they swept the White Sox in four games. Well, maybe not as excited. If they had beat the White Sox in four as if they had swept the Dodgers in four. Maybe a little bit more excitement with the Dodgers because they're the defending World Series champions. But, man, a win's a win, dude. Doesn't matter what it looks on the scoreboard. Doesn't matter. Could be 1-0. Could be 11-10. W's a W. 913-586-7965 is our number. A lot of conversation about Hunter Renfro in the text line. Can we just get rid of Hunter Renfro, though? I'm intrigued by the question, right? I think the Royals would probably have to eat the contract, but at this point, why not? Why not? He had the year last year. He went down with the injury in the midst of a struggle. He came back. He hit better coming off the injury late in the year. But so far this year, he's been bad. He's been really bad. And with the way that Drew Waters has played since he came up, I'm not sure we see MJ Melendez back in the show again. Not in a Royals uniform. I would be surprised to see it happen. And Hunter Renfro is, I think he's eating a roster spot that you could have somebody else there. I don't know. It doesn't necessarily need to be a pitcher. I don't know if you can look at your minor league system and see a prospect that is worth making the call up for. I know what everybody's going to say. Oh, Jack Caglione's right there. I don't want Cags to come up and be a rotation guy. I don't want him to come up and be in a revolving door of guys that are playing left, right, center field or whatever. I want Jack Caglione to come up to the big league level and be an everyday starter at one position on the field. I don't want him to be a part of a platoon and that's how he spends his rookie year. I think that's the last thing that this Royals team should be looking towards. After hours here on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard. Hey, we got a new Pope. And I find it kind of fascinating. I want to talk about that a little bit when we come back. Don't worry, there are some sports-related conversations that occur with this new Pope that's coming along. Plus, a Sports Illustrated article discussing one team in the AFC West and if they have gained any ground on the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll talk about that later on here on After Hours on 96.5 The Fan.
On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us. Listen to the Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
The tide turned for the Royals on April 20th, right? That's the date we all keep coming back to. That's when this 15 out of 17 streak began. I just saw this from the Royals' Twitter page. Yeah, if you call it X, that's fine. I'm not doing that. Since April 20th, Mikel Garcia is hitting .397. His OPS is a 1.076. OPS over 1,000 since April 20th. His American League ranks since April 20th. He's tied for the most hits in the AL. He's got the second best average in the AL, the third best OPS in the American League, and he's got the second most stolen bases in the AL since April 20th. That's nuts. What else is nuts, and I promise I'm going to make it make sense for discussing this on a sports show. There's a new Pope. And he's from the United States. First ever. First ever Pope from the United States of America. He's from Chicago. Robert, is it Prevost? Prevost? I'm not entirely sure how you pronounce that last name, admittedly. I just started learning about him. He's going to go by Leo. Pope Leo. Like I said, he's from Chicago. And now I believe, just, to cover all of our bases here, folks, we may want to just extend out a recency apology to the new Pope of the Vatican. Because according to a video I saw today of an old news article, the new Pope's a White Sox fan. So we got a new Pope announced today. He's from Chicago. He's a White Sox fan, and the Royals complete a four-game sweep of his favorite team. So let me be the first. You know, I won't speak for everybody, but I'll speak for whoever wants to be spoken for. I apologize, Pope Leo. Sorry for doing your boys like that over the course of 4 days here at Kauffman. I'm sorry. But the Twitter memes are outstanding, dude. They're so good. I mean, the number of things I've seen on Twitter. There was a few years back, there was an Iowa-Wisconsin football game in which some college student wore like a Pope outfit, like a Pope costume to the game. And so I'm seeing that all over my Twitter feed today about the new Pope and this video of this college kid wearing it. I saw another one today. It was the video of the Pope like coming out and being announced to the folks there in Italy at the Vatican, which I guess it's not technically Italy. The Vatican is its own separate country. And I said, a new Pope from Chicago needs a true Chicago introduction. And it was him being walked out with Sirius playing in the background, which, if you're unfamiliar, was the Chicago Bulls starting lineup music in the 90s, right? Which has become super famous for all of the different reasons. Somebody says, the father, the son, and Da Bears. Am I right? It's tough. Somebody said, Pope Leo is likely the first pope to have ever eaten at Culver's. Oh, man. I love it. I am absolutely a fan. I think that some of these memes are absolutely hysterical today. But I thought that was kind of funny. The Pope is a White Sox fan, and the Royals just 4-0 swept his boys from the South Side over the course of 4 days. He said in the article, in the news story, that his he's a White Sox fan. His mom was a Cubs fan. His dad was a Cardinals fan. Make that household make sense. I'm not sure how you could eat dinner together. Mom's a Cubby. Dad's a Cardinals fan. Son's a White Sox fan. How could you agree on anything? I just found that funny. 913-586-7965. We were talking about Hunter Renfrow, right? And how somebody in the text line said that I think it's time to move on from Hunter Renfrow. And I'm kind of in agreement with that. I think that it's probably time. It hasn't worked. And I think his contract is like $7.5 to $8.5 million. Might be more than that. I think it's somewhere in that vein of like $7-8.5 million. And I think that your only course of action is to either keep him or cut him, DFA him, and eat the contract. The question is, where do you go from there, right? And somebody said Tolbert is probably the only guy they could bring up to replace Renfrow, but that's a no-go because he's destined to go back whenever Salvi's hip lets him catch again. Yes and no, right? I don't completely disagree, right? I think that if it was Peyton Wilson, yeah, he's obviously going to go back down once Salvi can catch. You don't need three guys behind the dish every day. So I don't know. I find it interesting. Going down here a little bit earlier, I'm fine with eating the Renfrow contract, but if that's what people want, give me the replacement so we can all have a conversation. Let's talk some real baseball. And that's where I stop myself, right? That's where I hit the wall, is I don't know where you go. If Renfro's off the roster, who do you bring in as 25-26, right? Who's the guy that you're calling up to become a part of this revolving door, right? Who becomes a part of this smorgasbord of guys? I just don't know. Lance says, Hunter Renfrow hits like I diet. Terrible, and everyone knows it. Damn. Somebody said he's going to make all of Italy mad by bringing deep dish pizza to the Vatican. He spent a third of his life in Chicago, a third of it in Peru, and a third of it in Rome. He hasn't been there to see this current display of baseball out of the Sox. Good for him. John Rave? Somebody suggests bringing John Rave up. I'm not sure what his numbers look like right now. Rave's 27, playing AAA. He's hitting .268 so far this year in Omaha. Six home runs, 19 ribbies. He's got an OBP of .341. Could be 27 years old, so he's kind of in between at the moment, right? Nelson Velasquez is another name that we've talked about. Constantly a guy that gets called up and down and up and down and up and down for this Royals team over the course of the years. He hasn't played with the Royals Major League Club, at least so far this year. Taking a look at it right now, he's hitting 167 in AAA, is Nelson Velasquez. And I know that's not everything, right? It's not always an exact correlation, but certainly doesn't exude a ton of confidence for me calling up a guy like Nelson Velasquez to be the guy there. I don't know. I think it's fascinating. Will they do that? Probably not. They'll probably hold on to Hunter Renfroe, if I'm being honest. I'm not sure I want to see it, but they might. White Sox have now got the Pope, but no hope. Damn. Just going to beat him over the course of 4 days and then just dog on him like that? It's tough. It's tough, but that's what the White Sox do, right? I saw a stat today that right now the Los Angeles Angels are on pace to have the worst walk-to-strikeout ratio of any batting order in MLB history. Actually, they would be tied with the 2019 Chicago White Sox. Not last year's White Sox that lost 121 games, the 2019 White Sox. Just for reference, if anybody wants to know how bad the White Sox have been, it dates back to at least 2019 that they have been historically, irreparably, inconceivably bad. The new Pope is from Chicago. Say the White Sox need divine intervention to save their season without saying the White Sox need divine intervention to save their season. Listen, not to sound blasphemous, I'm not quite sure divine intervention could get this thing done. They're that bad. 913-586-7965 is our number. I want to talk about an article from Sports Illustrated suggesting one rival of the Chiefs in the AFC West that may have done some things this offseason to catch the back-to-back-to-back AFC champions. We'll talk about that next right here on After Hours. Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard, your home for Kansas City sports.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The memes roll on. Time taken to get picked. Shedeur Sanders, 3 days. The new Pope, 2 days. Pope Leo is likely the first Pope to have ever touched the bean in Chicago. We got an American Pope before we saw a Bills or Bengals Super Bowl win. That's the one. And now we continue. Sports Illustrated, specifically Chad Jensen, who writes for the Denver Broncos on Sports Illustrated, came out with an article earlier today, just a couple of hours ago. You can find it on SI.com. /NFL/Broncos. The article, the headline says, did the Broncos do enough this offseason to catch the Chiefs? I mean, Denver obviously wildly blew past their expectations from a year ago. And they've got an outstanding defense, top seven. I mean, they were top 10 in the league. Their offense was solid with a rookie quarterback in Bo Nix who proved every doubter wrong possible, including myself. I laughed audibly out loud when Sean Payton and the Broncos announced they were taking Bo Nix in the first round last year. I laughed hysterically. Pie on my face. But did they do enough this offseason to catch the Chiefs or get close? They did make some interesting moves, right? They signed Evan Ingram. Sort of like a, you know, their proverbial tight end that they haven't really had since they traded Noah Fant in the Russell Wilson Drew Lock exchange, traded him to Seattle. Not that Noah Fant was overly effective either. They signed Dre Greenlaw from the 49ers. Again, what does Dre Greenlaw look like after the Achilles tear in the Super Bowl 2 seasons ago, right? He didn't play hardly at all, if at all, this past year for San Fran. They did sign Talanoa Hufanga from the Niners, which I think was a very, very sneaky pick for the Broncos, trying to shore up even more of that secondary, along with drafting Jahdae Barron from in the first round of the draft. So they really did a great job, again, I think, of continuing to shore up the defense. They also drafted R.J. Harvey to be presumably their starting running back, which I think was a good fit. Man, I don't know. The Broncos are closer. They closed the gap, but have they caught up to the Chiefs? No. No, I don't think so. But it raises the question, well, what about the rest of the division? Okay, we look at the Los Angeles Chargers. Coming off a great year, first-year head coach Jim Harbaugh, back in the NFL after winning a national title at Michigan, did great things. Justin Herbert was a game manager, which I'm not saying that is a negative. I don't really like the whole game manager moniker and the negative stereotype that follows it. He did a great job last year. He threw for 3,800 yards, 23 touchdowns, 3 picks. He completed over 65% of his passes. I'm not as much of a Justin Herbert hater as a lot of other people are. He gets hated on because he gets lumped into conversations about who's the guy that's going to surpass Mahomes, and he gets thrown into that because he's in the same division as Mahomes. I think a lot of his hate is unfounded because of the fact that whenever Mahomes is struggling, people always throw Justin Herbert's name out because they play in the same league. They play twice a year. He's a trendy sort of pick for other people. I think he's a good quarterback. I think he's a borderline top 10 quarterback in the National Football League. I really do. They did a phenomenal job at the running back position this offseason. You bring in a bell cow back like Najee Harris, a guy that you have no problem giving the ball to 20 times a game. Is he the most effective back? No. Is he going to be a 1,600 yard rusher in this league? Not unless he's got 400 carries, right? But he's a guy who, if you give him the ball 250, 300 times, he's going to get you to 1,000 yards. He's going to be a guy you have to account for in the run game. And then they went and grabbed Amarion Hampton in the first round. Home run. Absolute home run. Jacob, you know. You've done this show with me. You know how much of an Amarion Hampton fan I was. You know how much I was hoping and praying that this man was going to somehow fall to 31 and the Chiefs were going to land a preeminent three-down back for their offense. And as soon as we were watching the draft, we were out at the landing in Liberty, right? We had our big draft party out there. Jay and Chris Unocero were doing their draft coverage out there. It was so much fun. Everybody was out there. And after the Saints had passed on Shedeur Sanders, we all left. Or we were all getting ready to leave, right? We were all packing up, saying our goodbyes and everything. And then when I saw that the Broncos had passed on Amarion Hampton, I was looking at the rest of that list, and I'm like, none of these teams really need a running back. Like, Amarion Hampton might legitimately just fall to the Chiefs at 31, and the Chiefs have their running back for the next decade. Not a thought in my mind that it would be Los Angeles. I'm like, they just signed Najee Harris to a pretty decent-sized deal. Najee Harris is a great fit for what Jim Harbaugh wants out of his running backs. They don't need Amarion Hampton. So I left. I got in my car. I had the broadcast up on my phone, the ESPN broadcast up on my phone. As I was walking out, my car connects to the Bluetooth. Within 30 seconds, Goodell comes to the podium and announces, in the first round of the NFL draft, the Los Angeles Chargers have selected Amarion Hampton, running back from North Carolina. I could have crashed my car in the parking lot. I was so upset. I'm like, of all teams, the Chargers? But it was a great pick. It was a great pick. Now, the Chargers have some issues they got to contend with, right? They've done some things defensively that you question, right? Joey Bosa, no longer in LA. He's a member of the Buffalo Bills. They had to throw some guys out in order to make room. I don't know if the Chargers have gained a lot of ground, but they're more competitive, even more competitive than they were a year ago. The Raiders, I think, are the team that's made the biggest jump. Is it enough to contend? No. I don't think any of the three teams below the Chiefs are going to be able to really push them and contend. I think the Chiefs are still a 12 or a 13 win team. I think that the Broncos are an 11 win team. I think the Chargers are still a 10 or 11 win team. And then you've got the Raiders, who are a 8 or 9 win team, depending on.
It's going to be a competitive division.
It's going to be a very competitive. It might be the best division top to bottom. And for a variety of reasons. Number one, all four of these teams have strong pieces defensively, right? Broncos are a top 10 defense in the National Football League. The Chiefs have been a top 10 defense in the National Football League the last couple of years. The Chargers, we know what Jim Harbaugh likes to do. He wants to be strong defensively, and they've got some good pieces. They lost a lot, so they're going to have to get that sorted. The Raiders, you sure up Max Crosby for the long haul. They seem to be expressing some level of interest in possibly getting Trey Hendrickson over from Cincinnati if they can't come to agreement on a deal. The biggest thing is the coaching in that division, man. The coaching in that division is tough, dude. Andy Reid, 3 Super Bowls under his belt. Pete Carroll with the Raiders now. Multiple national championships and should have multiple Super Bowl rings. Should have run the football. He didn't. Hindsight's 2020. He does have 1 Super Bowl ring under his belt. Jim Harbaugh. He's won a national championship. And he's been to a Super Bowl. And Sean Payton. Super Bowl winning head coach. That's the AFC West head coaches? Good Lord.
I think going into the season, it's going to be them or the NFC North. I mean, you just got to give it to the division who just had 2 teams that had 14 wins. And
yeah.
The Browns did have a really good offseason.
They did.
Not the Browns, the Bears.
Yeah, the question is, can the Vikings replicate? You let Darnold walk. Is J.J. McCarthy really that guy? I don't know. That's a question that's going to have to get answered. The Packers are solid. I loved their pick in the first round. I thought that was a great selection on their part. First round receiver they've taken in like 20 years, 20 plus years. It's crazy. But I look at this AFC West, and this quarterback play in the AFC West is going to be as strong as it's ever been this coming season. Mahomes, best quarterback in the league. We'll get to that later. I've got a couple of articles that say otherwise that I'll rip apart. You've got Bo Nix coming off of maybe a top 5 rookie quarterback season we've ever seen, and would have been a unanimous runaway offensive player of the year if not for the fact that the best rookie quarterback season in NFL history occurred right alongside it with Jaden Daniels. Geno Smith coming from Seattle to Las Vegas to be the head coach of this Raiders team, pairing alongside Pete Carroll once again, I think is great. And I think Geno's a great player, great quarterback, very consistent guy. He's been a Pro Bowler in his career. And you've got Justin Herbert with the Los Angeles Chargers. Strong quarterback play, strong coaching up and down this division. This is going to be a dogfight in the AFC West. No matter who the Chiefs play over the course of those 6 games against other teams, it's going to be a fun one. Somebody said, I think Hampton's going to have that job by the beginning of the season. That's who I wanted as well. I could definitely see it. And Najee Harris is sort of your goal line, short yardage, breather sort of back. I don't know. But
I mean,
he's been a bell cow throughout his career.
What the Lions are doing.
Oh, 100%. But again, Amarion Hampton is a different style of back than Najee Harris, yes, but he's still sort of a bell cow sort of a back. That's why I wanted him in Kansas City, because he's a guy you could look at and say, yeah, I'm fine giving him the football on first, second, or third down. I don't see a guy like that in the Chiefs running back room right now. And Najee Harris is a bell cow guy. The Broncos will go 2nd. The Raiders are much improved in that culture. The Chiefs or the Chargers are going to finish last, in my opinion. I don't know. But again, the team that finishes last in the AFC West might still be an 8 or a 9 win football team, which is really impressive. Really impressive. Somebody else in the text line said Pacheco is going to have a comeback year. I hope you're right, but I don't think you are, if I'm being honest. I'm not sold on Isaiah Pacheco. I like him. I love him as a player. I love how hard he plays, how hard he runs, right? He runs like the ground did something to his mom. Like, I mean, he runs like somebody. I don't even know. I don't know what the right phrase is. He runs like he's mad at everything. but his vision is questionable at times. He's not a guy you can look at on third and one, fourth and one, and say, go get us a yard, and you have a belief in your heart of hearts that he's going to go get it, right? Kareem Hunt's a guy you can look at on third and fourth and short and be like, hey, we need one here, go get us two. We need two, go get us three. We need three, go get us three. Pacheco doesn't exude that. He doesn't always wait for his blocks to develop. And sometimes one injury is all it takes for things to begin to kind of fall off a little bit. I don't know. I think the Chiefs have three very different running backs that become very predictable. Okay, Pacheco's in on first and 10. He's in on second and 7. Yeah, you might run the football. You might not. Third and long, Breshard Smith's in the game. Okay, you're going to throw it. Third and 2, Hunt's in the game. You're likely going to throw it. You're likely going to run it in that situation. I don't know. That's my one complaint about the Chiefs this offseason. My biggest complaint about the Chiefs this offseason is I don't think they answered the call on the need for a running back at all. Oh, I like that one. 913-586-7965, 417 in the text line just said, Pacheco runs like a kid who's trying on new light-up sneakers in the store. A little bit. The Chiefs had a chance to get Caleb Johnson and let him get away. Big mistake. Yeah, I would have loved to have seen it, but I'm an Iowa homer, so I just think it would have been fun. And he's a bell cow guy. He's not the most effective guy catching the ball out of the backfield. He's a little bit slower. I was disappointed with his 40. I cooled off on Caleb Johnson a little bit after his performance at the combine, running almost a 4.5. In fact, his first run was a 4.51, and then I think he ran like a 4.48 or a 4.49. It was definitely slower than I thought after the way he ran the ball at Iowa, where he would just run away from people at his size and stature. I really liked him, and then I cooled off a little bit. But I think Pittsburgh hit the nail on the head. That guy's a perfect fit in the black and gold there in Pittsburgh. He runs like the ground owes him money. He does a little bit. He does. After hours here on 96.5, the Fan will be back, wrap up hour number one of the show with an interesting story. We've got history in the NFL. A fully guaranteed contract for a rookie that's never been seen before in the National Football League. Right here on After Hours on 96.5, the Fan. I think I'm going to lead every time we come back from break with a new Pope joke that I'm seeing on Twitter. They're all going to be sports related, I promise. I just saw this one. So Adam Schefter reported on it, right? White smoke. A new Pope has been selected. He will soon speak at the center window of St. Peter's Basilica. Somebody else tweets Adam Schefter. He says, this is not sports. Please delete this. To which somebody responds with, what do you mean? The Cardinals drafted him. Papal jokes? Come on. That's papal jokes and sports combined together into a meme.
I just saw the one about how Chicago finally, or they got a Pope before they got a 4,000-yard passer.
That's phenomenal. Oh, that's tough. Yeah, that's, man, that's a rough one. 913-586-7965. We're talking about the division, the AFC West, because somebody on Sports Illustrated said that the Broncos may have done some things this offseason to catch up to the Kansas City Chiefs. And I think they've done some things to get closer, but I don't think it's a level playing field. I still think the Chiefs are the team to beat in the division. I think they're the team to beat in the AFC until proven otherwise. 417 says Genty leads the division in rushing. Bowers leads all tight ends in receiving stats. Vegas wins 10 games. I think they're going to be a good offensive football team. Don't get me wrong. I feel like they still have some questions in terms of their wide receivers. You know, like Jacoby Myers. Is Jacoby Myers wide receiver one for the Raiders right now? Is Jacoby Myers a wide receiver one? Brock Bowers is going to have a great year. Genty's going to have a great year. The Raiders have some defensive questions that I have to have answered, right? I would say more so than the Chargers, or less so than the Chargers do, but more so than the Broncos or the Chiefs. A 913 says, how cool would it be to have all four teams from the same division to make the playoffs for the first time in history? The AFC West will become the AFC best. Broncos, he's got going 13-4 and winning the division. He's got the Chiefs going 12-5, Chargers going 11-6, and the Raiders, or as this person calls them, criminals, going 10-7. Ouch. That's a tough one. 913-586-7965 is the number. Much more coming up here on the program. We got some NHL playoff news. I want to talk about the NBA playoffs. I know it's not a huge hot button issue here in the Metro. I get it, but I love basketball. It's my favorite sport. I always tune in. I like watching the NBA. A lot of people don't. I want to talk about the NBA, and I want to get on my soapbox a little bit because my Celtics are blowing an opportunity to go back-to-back, and it is pissing me off. Sorry. I had to let a little steam off there. I want to talk about where the Royals are sitting in the latest ESPN MLB power rankings. And a legendary boxer coming out of retirement in his mid-40s. Why? I don't know, but let's try to get it answered coming up here in hour number two of After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard, your home for Kansas City sports.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Brayton, we're in it together. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on motherhood, wellness, self-love, and more. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Brayton wherever you get your podcasts.